This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
Warning, the views of the host of today's podcast are not necessarily the views of today's host of the podcast. It's a dangerous one. It goes right off the rails in the first minute and a half. Good luck. First, Nina wrote in about her experience with Relief Factor. She says, Relief Factor got me out of pain. Now I can do work in my garden, I can walk my dog, I can run up and down stairs without being in pain. I sleep through the night without an ice pack on my knee. Thank you for turning me on to Relief Factor. I hear these stories every day. It's usually from, you know, hot women like Nina who are like, Glenn, thanks for turning me on today. And I'm like, I know. And then they're like, I mean, turning me on to Relief Factor. And I'm like, oh, yeah, that too. Try Relief Factor. It's a daily supplement that helps your body fight pain by fighting inflammation. It's 100% drug-free. Over a million people have tried Relief Factor's quick start, and 70% of them have gone on to order it again. See how Relief Factor can help you with their three-week quick start kit. It's $19.95, comes with Relief Factor's Feel Better, Your Money Back Guarantee, so why not give it a try? ReliefFactor.com or call 1-800-4-RELIEF. 1-800-4-RELIEF. ReliefFactor.com.
You're listening to the best of the Glenn Beck program.
Okay, I want to talk to you just about the loss of sovereignty, because that's what's happening. We have abandoned all of our principles, and now we are, much of our life is ruled by unelected, unaccountable administrative agencies or courts, facing, you know, just this forever powerless feeling, no matter how you vote. Or we breathlessly wait to hear from world bodies on anything from acknowledgement of Hamas's rape or genocidal atrocities to legitimizing our existence. We stress over whether the ICC or the ICJ, which who even knows what those are, ruling on what self-defense is allowed. Why do we care about the WHO? I didn't elect them. I didn't start them. They have nothing to do with our Constitution. Feels at times we're trapped in a nightmare. And it's not your nightmare. It's Woodrow Wilson's nightmare. He was the tip of the progressive movement. Like Lenin was only Bolsheviks' monster's head. Wilson was the head of the monster of the progressive movement. They had a lot of friends, but things would have been very different without them. The good news is there's some books in case you don't understand what's happening to us. May I recommend, for starters, Ronald Pistrito's America Transformed and Arthur Herman's 1917. You can see the imprint of Wilson. And what is that imprint? One word can describe all of this, and that is arrogance. A tower of intellectual arrogance. Wilson and all those who follow in his footsteps, they just know better. They don't have to include you. And in fact, if you disagree or you oppose them, it's not wrong, it's evil to them. It is a religion. Under Wilsonian progressivism, select responsible adults will just decide what should be done based on the perfect enlightened scientific reason. Thus, it's the best and the right thing to do, leading to the best possible result. What law is this judge reading? What law? He just knows what's right. He doesn't have to follow the law. You follow the science, new science. In Wilson's time, it enabled the powerful elites of supposedly disinterested and impartial expert administrators. They didn't exist then, and they don't exist now. You think these scientists, these experts, don't have an axe to grind? They don't have an agenda? Please. Progressives might even get a pass that we shouldn't give them, because maybe it was all new back then. They didn't know. This ideal of pure-minded, rational scientists had not yet been punctured by the cruel needle of reality, or better said, the scalpel of Mengele. Wilson started the fundamental transformation of the United States. Yes, that one. Obama kicked it off the cliff. He flatters himself, implying that it started with him. For a purported historian, Wilson's blindness to the lessons of history and human nature is staggering and willful. Exactly what's happening today. It was Wilson that started the living document thing. And this is where it all goes wrong. He made the case the founders' era was so different. The Constitution is inadequate now. Progressives knew better. They had to destroy it so they could have all of their socialist utopia and all of their control. They could unleash the government to solve all of the problems. And Wilson pretended that to understand the Declaration of Independence, you had to discard its preamble, which in fact contains all of our principles. Without all of those principles in the preamble, it's just a Dear John or a Dear George letter. It has no moral or spiritual significance at all. And this understanding is what gave us the administrative state. You vote, but smarter people decide. It gave us the League of Nations, for which Wilson was willing to sacrifice anything. Even the self-determination of peoples. Wilson promised to keep us out of World War I. Not because he was a pacifist. He wasn't. Not because he believed in George Washington's warning against foreign entanglements or the Monroe Doctrine. No. He saw the promised land. The Progressive League of Nations. He would keep America's hands clean of blood and gunpowder and then just swoop in the end. And a wise, impartial judge would settle the kids' disputes once and for all. And Wilson sent in her calling on Congress in April 1917, her all unprepared, not because of the Lusitania that was in May, but because Russia's czar had fallen in March, turning the conflict into one of democracies against old-style European empires. So Wilson believed we had to send her in. We had to send our troops in. He now believed taking America in, tipping the balance of the democracies in our favor, was the quickest way to his utopia of a safe world, safe for democracy. All organized under the League to solve all of the problems and forever end all wars. Well, in the process, he inadvertently enabled the birth of communist Russia. Russians are responsible for that, starting with Lenin, Stalin, and Trotsky. Germany sent in Lenin at the worst time. But none other than Wilson might have stopped Lenin and didn't. Wilson, by missing every single opportunity, helped steer Russia away from the cliff, ensured we'd inherit the history of communism from the USSR down to the CCP, and it ain't over. He thrusted America onto the world stage. He's the guy who was really responsible, in my opinion, for World War II. Then we got into World War II. Russia had to do most of the bloodshed. They lost more people than the rest of us combined. And it's continued over and over and over again. Why? Why? Why do we keep following these people? Why do we keep saying, oh, yeah, well, the State Department knows better? We should just keep getting involved and doing the same thing over and over again. It's insanity. Not saying that America shouldn't have a hand in world affairs. Some help for Ukraine or Israel is probably good if it was done differently. Still, the league was predictably impotent. Didn't do anything. Didn't solve World War II. Yet the vision just doesn't die. Mm-mm. Some radioactive zombie just keeps coming back. Now it's the UN, where China's vote counts as much as America's, Libya's as much as Argentina, where the Council on Human Rights is run by Iran. Oh, my gosh. And they forever bash the United States. They bash Israel. But they don't present wars. How many wars has the UN prevented? I'll help you out on this. Zero. Massacres? Zero. Genocide? Zero. How many times have they stopped nuclear proliferation? Zero. It also keeps Palestinians in perpetual aid, provides them with a dedicated agency, the UN RWA, which provides terrorists with salaries, material, and moral support, and yet they just continue. WEF, same mold. Always the same idea. You're ignorant, you're selfish, you're stupid, probably evil. Here's what has to happen. Responsible adults must take charge of their own individual freedom and national sovereignty. We're trapped in Wilson's dream. You want to wake up? You have to go back to the beginning, where Wilson took America and the world off track, put the eternal principles that he despised so much back in their place at the apex, something that all of these world globalists just do not believe, that all men are created equal, that they're endowed by their creator with certain unalienable rights, and these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed. Recognize these moral and eternal words. They're the next best thing to scripture. Restore what Wilson discarded: humility, gratitude, wisdom, knowledge of true history, a genuine understanding of America's founding. And let us all be humble and return to God. God bless the USA. I don't think he can anymore. One of the things I value the highest in my life is trust. I want people to trust me, and I want to be able to trust people. And it's hard. It's hard. After you've been burned several times, it's really hard. Those things are really important when the stakes are high. Like, for instance, an easy one, when you're trying to buy or sell a home. The process is so complicated with so many moving parts that you need to trust the real estate agent. And that's why I started a company with my brother years ago called Real Estate Agents I Trust. And it's not called Real Estate Agents You Can Trust. It's that I trust, because it begins with me. If I can trust this agent, if I know my people are really doing rigorous and regular checks on all of the people that we might recommend to you, then I know I can trust them. And if I can trust them, you can then say, this is a real estate agent I trust. The name says it all. RealEstateAgentsITrust.com. Whether you're moving across the street or across the country, we can help you with the right real estate agent. RealEstateAgentsITrust.com. Now back to the podcast. This is the best of the Glenn Beck program. And don't forget, rate us on iTunes. Oh, Bridget, I'm so glad you're here today.
I'm glad. I was worried.
You're worried. You were probably sitting in the makeup room.
I was.
Listening, going, oh my gosh, I have to go in there.
I was like, uh-oh. Can I ask you a question? When you are in these places and it feels unjust and you're frustrated, how do you regain some semblance of faith or sanity or...
I'm my faith has temples, and I am going to the temple right after the show today.
Okay.
That is the only thing that will help me regain anything.
Yeah.
And then I'm going to the ranch. And I may not ever come back.
He threatens
come back.
That often. Today I kind of believe it.
Yeah.
I mean, it would be hard if you didn't have to do this for, let's say, money reasons.
Yeah,
to
I don't.
To not want to just check out.
Yeah, I don't. I don't.
So
the
what?
Only thing that is putting me in this seat is my religious conviction. But today is the very first day that I have ever seriously thought of George Washington over and over again in my mind. George Washington, you know, he did not want to be the general.
Yeah.
Okay? He didn't. When they suggested him, he said, look, guys, wait, before you vote, I know there are people in this room that really don't think I should be general. So I'm going to walk out. So feel free to express all of that.
Uh-huh.
Okay. He didn't want to. He was. He became the general. It was horrible. You know, he was president. And when the Articles of Confederation, all he wanted to do is go back to his ranch, his farm, and farm. That's all he wanted to do. And they came to his door at 3 o'clock in the morning in a rainstorm because the Articles of Confederation were falling apart. And they said, General, the country is falling apart. You're the only one that can, you know, hold everybody together. And that was true in his case.
Right.
And he looked at him and said, have I not yet done enough for my country?
Mm.
And I've thought of that. You know, have I not? I think I've done my job. I think I've done my job. That's the first time that I've ever felt that way. Because I'm not George Washington.
Right.
You know, I mean, he was critical to the Republic surviving.
Right. But do you think that people would feel isolated and like they were going crazy if they didn't have somebody expressing the same frustration that you feel?
I think there's a lot of people that are doing that, though, now. I mean, we didn't have that before.
Right.
And honestly, Bridget, what bothers me so much is all of this is going on. I have people in my own life, my own friends and stuff that are looking at me as I've always been respectful and reasonable and everything else. And they're looking at me like, you think it's really bad, huh? You think this is, we're on the verge of class. And I'm like, how could I possibly convince anyone of anything if people in my own life don't believe it?
Mm.
People in my own life look at me askance. They know who I am. They know I'm a logical thinker. But they're just so scooped into the little teeny slice of information that they have.
But I also think most people can't comprehend it. And what are they going to do? You know, I don't think people feel, even if it's something they considered, I don't know how they would comprehend it on a like play the tape forward level. Like, how are you going to take care of your family? What are you going to do? What does this mean? What does this look like? What, even if they say, you know, people, we joked about this last time I was here, like, America's too fat for a civil war.
Right.
How do you, when people are talking about this, it's like, play the tape forward step by step. I know someone like you can and probably often does, but I don't think the average person who's trying to like pay their bills, raise their kids,
I know,
deal with just food prices, childcare, how are they going to, they don't have time to comprehend that reality.
So, and those people do not want to listen to things like this because it's overwhelming for them.
But I think that's where it's our job in some respect to give some kind of hope.
Right. There is hope. But quite honestly, I've been saying this all week. This is a straight, not spelled like a straight line. This is a straight and narrow path. And we're threading a needle in a hurricane and a tornado at the same time. And the only thing that will help us do that is God.
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting. It reminds me of the first time I ever came on your podcast, which now seems like ages ago. But the first time, it was just the interview that we did. Yeah. And I was like this little wide-eyed, you know, I didn't know.
You were like Bambi.
I didn't
and
know.
And the fire was coming.
Because when you're in.
There's a hunter on the hill and a fire. Mommy's gone.
You're all alone now. Child in the wilderness. Yeah. I didn't know anything. I knew conservative media existed, but I didn't know anything. I really knew nothing. And I remember just being like, did you know the left has double standards, Glenn? I had no idea.
Yeah.
But hearing you today as I was getting my makeup done, it was I was flashing back to that. Like, you know, when we sit around and go, why? Well, I think we know why.
We know why.
Is enraging. It makes me understand why people feel the way they feel, that rage that exists in terms of these are just two standards that are not applied evenly at all. And I'm never really sure what to do or what, you know, how to, it's like, I don't know how to make light of something like that because it's not funny.
Yeah.
And they it's want really you to kind of laugh at it because.
But that is the answer.
Yeah.
It is to be able to laugh at it and bring joy. And you know what? I said to Stu before I started the show today, I said, it's Friday. Now then let's be philosophical. And let's have some fun. It's Friday, and then the Fannie Willis thing happened,
yeah.
and I about burst a gasket.
Yeah, and it's always on Fridays that they do this.
I know
because they know
people
are going into the weekends, yeah.
And then they'll drink that away and they'll forget about it by Monday.
Yeah, I mean, I was thinking too about when you were talking about, you know, you don't want to do this. And you actually gave me a lot of good advice very early on. And one of the things you said to do.
Don't do this. I remember giving you that advice.
Don't do this. I didn't take that. Yeah. You said, make a file of things when people send you those nice emails that remind you why you're doing it or that you see a comment that comes through that says, you save me at a dark time. You talk a lot about mental health. You talk in a space where I don't feel like it gets enough attention.
Yeah.
You talk about addiction. You're not just talking about culture war stuff. You do help people. And you told me to keep a file of that. And I hope you have a similar file that you can
go
read.
So I don't take my own advice. But but I did do this weekend. A woman sent this. She made this for me. And
your like security blanket.
Yeah,
now.
It is. It's a beautiful handmade blanket.
It is beautiful.
And so I've had it behind me all week because, you know, she wrote and said, you know, I just appreciate what you do, et cetera, et cetera. And I've had it on the chair all week.
Yeah.
To remind me.
Yeah. I mean, one of the things being even though a lot of people think it's an act that my like little miss captain of the fence riding team. I know I'm not alone. I hear from people every day who feel frustrated with all, you know, a bipartisan frustration with all of it. And I don't sometimes know what I'm doing, but I do know it's like that famous Jack Kerouac quote, I have nothing to offer the world but my confusion. I mean, that's me, really.
Right.
I don't have answers. I don't know that anybody does right now. We're in unprecedented kind of times.
The only thing, and they're both overlooked and dismissed, is restore the Declaration of Independence, the Bill of Rights, and the Constitution. Live by that.
Mm-hmm.
And find meaning by finding God.
Yeah, I had a drunk aunt when I was freaking out like you. Well, she's still alive. I have a drunk. She's not drunk right now. Anyway, I have an aunt. She was drunk when we were talking.
Okay, all right. And she was on your show.
No, and she, I was kind of in a place like Glenn Beck is in right now.
Okay, yeah.
And I was in the darkness of America and freaking out. And she was like, When I was a kid, we had a president assassinated. We had his brother was assassinated. Martin Luther King Jr. was assassinated. There were riots in every major city. And she was like, and now we're fine. And so I was like, yeah, I mean, there's something to be said for that.
There is.
We've been through a lot.
Yeah, yeah. But the culture was generally good. Where the culture, if you look at, we're a boat on the ocean. This ocean is now eel infested, shark infested, and waiting to kill you all. Where back then, the culture, the sea that we were in, was generally good. It had problems,
right?
But it was generally, you know, it was generally trying to be better. Now it seems like we're all just like, to hell with everybody else. Yeah. I'm going to screw them. I don't care if it's legal or illegal. If I want it, I'm going to do it.
Yeah. I mean, this was my biggest issue with Trump, which I'm sure a lot of your audience is going to be stoked to hear. But my biggest issue with him was that he kind of gave people permission to be like the worst version of themselves in some instances.
In some.
In others, he really inspired people to be more patriotic and fight for the country. And he was kind of their guy. But just his own, sometimes I find hilarious, but not always hilarious behavior. Gave, it seemed like it be, and it's always been this, like race to the bottom, you know. I also wonder how much of it is just mediation, how much of it is the internet, how many of these other factors have led to erosion of our kind of shared sense of being proud of this miracle that we live in?
Right. How much of burning our cities down and our current vice president setting up a fund to bail everybody out? I mean, that's like, okay, that's probably not a good idea.
No, it's definitely... there is like a two Americas, you know, but it feels deeply pessimistic all around.
It does.
But that
we shouldn't be.
We still have a lot.
Yeah, I know. And we still have an election. I mean, I think the election, as long as it's fair, I think the election and both sides are, no matter what happens, both sides are going to say it was
this
unfair.
This is what makes me unsettled and enraged, and only what, like, something that happens today is what undermines the sense that this is fair. You know, that we're trying to, because if you don't believe that the election is fair, you've already given up on democracy. If you don't believe that your vote matters, if you think this is something, and this is something I've been saying to the left, and now I feel like I have to say it to the right as well. If you think that this is not fair, it's already over. But when something like this today with Fannie Willis happens, and somebody who clearly it's impropriety and should have been,
it's perjury. The biggest thing is perjury. You have the cell phone data. And if that doesn't matter, then why are you putting people in prison for murder or whatever else because of their cell phone data?
Yeah. And so it undermines the sense that this is fair.
Right.
And that we need a lot less of that.
Yeah.
We should be applying all of these things evenly. And when it's not, you start to when this festers in people's minds.
Because what kills me is O.J. Simpson. When they put the O.J. Simpson DNA stuff out, nobody knew what DNA. They had no idea what that meant. I didn't. Nobody.
Right.
You're like, I don't know. Is that kind of sounds weird. Is that real or not? This, the cell phone data? This is like coming back now and saying, well, I don't know if you can really trust the DNA data.
Mm.
You know, you're like, no, we've trusted this for years. And now all of a sudden, well, I'm not sure if we can really tell where they were.
You're listening to the best of Glenn Beck. Check out the full show podcast to listen to the rest of this interview.
I need some good news. I think I'll get it from Senator Eric Schmidt from Missouri. Eric, how are you, sir? Senator, how are you?
Good, Glenn. I'm doing great. How are you?
Well, I'm not having a good day. I'm stuck on this Fannie Willis thing. There is no justice. There is absolutely no justice. If the judge found that they couldn't prove there wasn't enough evidence that she perjured herself over and over again, and so did Wade. When they have the cell phone triangulation data, then why shouldn't every person who has ever been convicted on that cell phone triangulation data, especially in Georgia, why should that stand? And how can you trust that there's any kind of justice in this country if not only an attorney, but the district attorney can boldly, gleefully lie in court and get away with it?
Yeah, no, I think under most circumstances, the fact pattern that's been laid out in that case would be potentially disbarred.
Not exactly.
Not just stay on the case.
Yes.
But certainly face disciplinary action.
Yes.
So it is just, it's ridiculous.
Okay. Give me some good news, will you?
Well, I will. So Monday, Missouri versus Biden is being argued at the Supreme Court. And it is, as we've talked about before, it's the most important free speech case in the history of the country, certainly in a generation, because it deals with the federal government in this vast censorship enterprise, coercing, colluding, cajoling these social media giants to censor speech. And what the judge found at the lower court, when I filed it when I was attorney general in Missouri, what the judge found at the lower court was that this was almost exclusively conservatives being censored. It reeked of viewpoint discrimination, which is violates the First Amendment. And it was Orwellian. I mean, what was uncovered, Glenn, were tens of thousands of pages of emails and text messages from high-ranking government officials to social media giants saying, take it down, or we're going to launch an investigation, or we're going to sue you under antitrust issues. I mean, really, jeez, really, the full power of the federal government was being used to suppress dissent, to silence Americans. And so that's been shown in the case. And so that now it's been appealed by the government. They want to continue to censor people. And the Supreme Court's going to hear oral arguments on that on Monday.
And how do you think it's going to go?
I'm hopeful. I just think, you know, the case is going to, a lot of it will come down to what was the government actually doing, and were they, in fact, coercing, right? Were they using the power of the federal government to get these social media giants to do the things that they can't legally do themselves? What makes this case unique is typically social media companies are sued by people who've been deplatformed or their posts have been taken down, and those go to the Northern District of California, and they're never to be seen again. But what's unique in our case is that we've sued the federal government itself and the actors like Jen Psaki and Anthony Fauci. I had a chance to take Anthony Fauci's deposition, took Elvis Chan's deposition, who was, of course, the FBI agent in charge, who was pre-bunking the Hunter Biden laptop story, calling it Russian disinformation, a hack and leak operation, even though they had the laptop already. They were pre-bunking this, getting ready for 2020. The COVID, the efficacy of masks, you know, they were suppressing that speech, vaccine issues, origins of COVID, where they were shutting anybody down who talked about this coming from the lab in Wuhan. And so all that's uncovered in this lawsuit. And if it wasn't for this lawsuit, Glenn, and then later Elon Musk buying Twitter with the Twitter files, and then later some of the congressional hearings, this stuff would still be in the dark. You know, it would still be a conspiracy theory, but it was happening. And what we refer to it in the lawsuit is a vast censorship enterprise. The number of agencies and people involved here is breathtaking. And the, you know, sometimes willing behavior of social media companies to comply and deplatform and censor people. But in some instances, they actually didn't want to do it.
Right.
And they changed their rules. So
that's why I wanted to ask you about. How much of this do you think was willing, and how much of it was fear of the government?
Both. So, yeah, I mean, these social media platforms typically were very aligned with the left. I think in many instances, Facebook, for example, after 2016 and Donald Trump won, they made it clear publicly they were never going to let that happen again. Right. They were never going to let that happen again. And so I think some of this was overtly political on their part, and they were willing participants. But there are, I mean, there are documents that were uncovered where they were pushing back. It is not, you know, it didn't violate their terms of service. And as one judge said in one of the previous arguments, that's a nice social media company you have there, right? It'd be a shame if something happened to it. Almost like a mob boss.
Oh, yeah, that is mob.
Coming from the government.
That is
yeah,
mob.
So this is, again, all the power that the federal government has, exerting that on these social media companies to do what they can't legally do themselves, which is to censor. And so this case is it's hard for me as somebody who believes deeply in the right to free speech and what that means for a country and freedom. This is, in my view, one of the most important cases the court's heard in a very, very long time.
Yeah.
But certainly as it relates to the First Amendment.
How is this going to
important? Because we're dealing with the virtual town square now, Glenn.
How is this going to affect the new systems that they're putting in for mis and disinformation and the government's work with Five Eyes and with social mm-hmm. media and the rest of the media, where they are just training them and guiding them through mis and disinformation? Will this case have anything to do with that? Because that's upon us right now.
Absolutely. And so that is the intention of this, too, is to bust that up. Because there's agencies like CISA that most people have never heard of.
Right.
But was very involved, Glenn.
To the audience what CISA is.
It's basically the agency that was created not that long ago to deal with sort of cybersecurity.
Right.
Okay. And what it found itself doing during COVID in particular was, under the guise of disinformation and misinformation, as you clearly articulated, that's a ploy by wannabe tyrants to control speech.
Yes.
The truth of the matter is you get to say your opinion, even if somebody else thinks it's wrong. The government doesn't get to shut that down. The government doesn't get to tell you what you can say and what you can hear. It's up to the individual to decipher what they, you know, how they want to move forward and what they, as they analyze facts and what their decisions are, right? It was sort of like with the mandates, like with mask mandates, you know, people can make their own decisions. They can judge if this is a good thing or not for their family. Same with the vaccine. And so all of this was about command and control from these sprawling agencies. And the other thing that was exposed in this too, Glenn, is there were universities, the University of Washington and Stanford were involved with helping, you know, sort of determine what the disinformation and misinformation
right.
was. So again, they're outsourcing this to their sort of web of allies to censor Americans. And this case would prevent that. This case, if the court rules the right way, and I hope that they do, it would essentially, there would be an injunction on all these agencies from engaging in that kind of activity. That'd be a huge win. Now, no matter what happens, the case, of course, stands for exposing all of this. But the remedy that hopefully will play out is preventing this. But as we've talked about before, I've got legislation in the Senate that would empower individuals to sue individual government actors if they've been censored, if their right to
that would be helpful.
Censored. You can go sue. Yeah, it would, because it would, instead of just one AG in a state suing, you'd have an army of citizens being able to stand up for their First Amendment rights.
You know, the Treasury, I think, in cooperation, I'd have to look this up. I think it was the World Bank or, I don't know, some world organization got together and ran a kind of a war game with the central banks around the world. And one of the things that came out of that was, we have got to shut down voices. And this is an exact quote. We have to shut down voices that disagree, in the case of an emergency, a financial emergency, that disagree with the actions of the central banks, even if they are correct, because they could further the collapse of the system. And I've been saying on the air for a while now, I know I'm not going to agree with the global central banks on whatever it is they're planning to do. The people who created the problem, I don't want designing a new system or anything else. And that snuffs out freedom of speech quickly.
It does. It does. And I think what you're seeing play out in real time is the broad diffusion of information, which is good. That's good. The democratization of how people get information. You're sort of on the front lines of all this a long time ago, but what they really fear is that individuals will then, you know, take different inputs and make up their own minds, as opposed to three networks that tell you everything they want you to hear. Mm-hmm. And again, I just think that we ought to be unafraid, I think, as conservatives, to talk about this is about freedom. This is about liberty. This is about making up your own mind. And they know how powerful that idea is. They absolutely. So what's the game plan? You saw it play out in COVID, which is create a crisis, whether it's real or manufactured, right?
Yep.
And then you consolidate power, you fearmonger, the othering of those who are dissenting. I mean, think about, go back in time just a little bit. They were, you know, in Australia, which we thought was kind of like us, but with cute animals. You know, they had camps, you know?
I know.
They had camps. People were being arrested in parks for not wearing masks. I mean, we can't memory hole all this stuff. That is a glimpse of the kind of world that some of these folks want to live in if you disagree with the regime. And we have to fight back with everything we have to make sure that doesn't happen. And that it also depends on us defending somebody else's right to say something we really disagree with. That's sort of the hallmark of it. But they want to bulldoze all that, Glenn, to have a regime narrative. And anybody that stands in the way is othered, marginalized, called all sorts of names, lose their job, deplatformed. I mean, that is so this whole like lecture we get from Joe Biden on threats to democracy, we have seen the threat. We have seen the threat, and it is Joe Biden's administration with this censorship enterprise and trying to throw political opponents in jail. So I think people are waking up to this, and I think we just got to stand up for it.
Good. Thank you, Eric. I appreciate it. We'll be watching Monday. If maybe you'll come back Monday or Tuesday, you could tell us how it went, and dissect the arguments back and forth between the two. Thank you, Eric. Appreciate it.
Sure thing. Thanks, yep. Ben.
Senator Eric Schmidt from Missouri.
One of the best measures of how corrupt a country is how rich its leaders get while they're in office. They're not so good at passing laws or governing, but they're great at investing.
Imagine if every American could make money off of war.
In 103 days, that position ends up gaining around 103%. So she made, you know, $2 million plus her original two, so $4
million. I signed, co-sponsored a bill and made too much voluminous flair over it that I wouldn't be seated. So I shut up. The threats that fly around are just absolutely insane.
The Blaze Originals team traveled to Washington, D.C., home to one of the most brilliant financial minds in the world, Nancy Pelosi. In our documentary, Bought and Paid For, How Politicians Get Filthy Rich, we spoke to Reps Matt Gaetz and Chip Roy, George Santos, and the bane of D.C. elites, Unusual Whales, to expose how our elected officials are beating the stock market and, more importantly, what we can do. To watch today, go to congressgetsrich.com and use code RICH to get $30 off an annual subscription to Blaze TV.